Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, a jag like Michael Walker. Polanco and Franco,
ooh, they're gonna execute it to first place. Check batted Valdeita and swinging strike rates. Raisins are shriveled grapes. Here's Adam's happy place.
Get hyped! Dylan Carlson and Alec Baum are here. Yu Darvish and Mookie Betts were awesome Thursday night, while Chris Paddock was not. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a Kokomo Friday. Frank Stanfill here alongside Scott White. We've got prospects, Thursday recap, week five planner, top five at each position. Happy Alec Baum Day, Scott. If this is Scott that I'm speaking with, not sure after yesterday's show.
It might be the essence of evil, Franklin.
Oh my gosh.
You can never be too sure.
What's up, Scott?
I'm fine. I'm here. I'm good.
Alec Baum Day. This is your guy.
Bomb, ba ba bomb, ba bomb, ba bomb, bomb. He is here. Yes, he has arrived for the Phillies. I do have a great affinity for Alec Baum. I like the plate discipline guy. I like the guy who makes a lot of contact. He seemed like he was developing power last year, hits the ball the other way well, good size. I think he could be a really big deal, and it seems like he's going to get an opportunity to play a lot for the Phillies. Scott Kingery moving back into the super utility role, going to play some outfield, Gene Segura sliding over to second base, and Baum playing probably close to every day, at least as long as... unless he is just totally awful and they have to move off of him. But yeah, I mean, prospect of that caliber, getting that kind of chance, you take a flyer on him and see where it goes. I think a hopeful outcome for him is something like Justin Turner, and the wild dream scenario outcome for him is something like Anthony Rendon. I think that's the kind of profile Baum presents. So I was actually a little more excited about him than Dylan Carlson, maybe just because I have Carlson fatigue at this point. I don't know. I technically did rank Carlson higher coming into the season. But yeah, I mean, the Cardinals just need healthy players who've actually been playing in the last 2 weeks, which Carlson has down at the minor league site. So he is definitely coming up whenever they're ready to resume play. And of course, we've been hyping him for a long time at this point.
Scott mentioned it. He has Dylan Carlson ranked as his 7th prospect, while Alec Baum is his 12th ranked prospect. Dylan Carlson, 21 years old, former first round pick in 2016. Last year in the minors, a .292 batting average, .914 OPS, 26 homers, 20 steals across AA and AAA. Really good plate discipline across the minors as well. And he was tearing up spring training, if you remember, the real spring training, not summer camp training. Spring training back in March, he was actually performing well against some major league, some minor league pitchers as well. And then for Baum, a little bit older, 24 years old, former first round pick in 2018. The Phillies drafted him as an older prospect, knowing how old he was and hoping that he would make a difference sooner rather than later for their team. Last year in the minors, a .305 batting average, .896 OPS, 21 homers, 30 doubles, 80 RBI. Really interesting blend for Alec Baum of contact, power, plate discipline. He hasn't struck out more than 15.7% at any level. He was in the lineup for the Phillies on Thursday. He was batting sixth, playing third base. He went, I believe it was one for four with a double.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, Scott, in a vacuum, who would you rather have, Baum or Carlson? Does it change depending on the format?
I think my head would say Carlson. My gut says Baum. Like, I have a better feeling about Baum. I don't know if that's what actually should be guiding me here. You know, format-wise, Baum's strengths seem probably geared more for a points league. Carlson's more for a roto league because it seems like there's an element of speed in his game. He had a 2020 season last year. And you obviously need more outfielders in the roto format. So, you know, it might break down along those lines, though. I think, you know, obviously either players hits their best, delivers their best case scenario, they're going to be valuable everywhere.
Keep going, Scott.
It's not strictly a format thing for me.
So how much fab would you spend on each if we have waivers running this weekend?
I just feel like I'm just throwing out a number. I would say 25%. You know, I'm not sure how much you've already spent to this point, obviously. I'm not sure how much you still need to chase saves at this point and reserve cash for that. But, you know, that's just out of the blue. That seems like a good number, 25% of your budget. Does that sound good to you?
That might be a little aggressive in just like the standard 12-team points league just because lineups are so shallow. But in roto leagues, I don't really have a problem with going that high. 20 to 25% is something that I had in mind. I play in a 15-team league that is going to have Fab run on Thursday night. So if anyone from that league is listening, it won't matter because Fab already runs. And I have $55 left out of 100, and I'm probably going to spend about 25 on Alec Baum and see if I get him. So that's the type of aggressiveness that we're looking for either one. Scott, I'll just throw a few names your way. Carlson, rest of season versus this player in Roto. Dylan Carlson versus Joe Adell. Who would you rather have?
Carlson.
Carlson versus Kyle Tucker.
I would rather have Carlson.
Carlson versus Kyle Lewis.
Carlson, come on.
Carlson versus Nick Senzel, someone I know that you're excited about.
Ah, yes. Yes, yes. So this is where it gets tricky with players like... I'm going to say Senzel because I have... Like, how rostered is he? He's got to be up there
70%.
Right in terms of 70%. Yeah. Yeah, you can't afford to let him go, especially since I think he might be on the verge of big things here. But it gets tricky with players like Jesse Winker, guys we were hyping yesterday, Jesse Winker, Garrett Hampson, Anthony Santander, though his ownership's getting up there too. It gets tricky because I feel like there's genuine reason to be excited about those guys.
Right.
I do feel like the prospects are higher priority because, you know, if those other guys aren't claimed yet, then there's a chance they will remain out there for a little longer, and you can see what happens with the prospect when the prospect, you know, they're going to be gobbled up because they're in the headlines right now. So I feel like you have to take a shot on the prospect first, but when it gets to a fab situation and like a weekly run fab league, the disproportionate amount of dollars you'll have to spend on a Dylan Carlson versus like a Jesse Winker may not be worth it. So that's something to keep in mind too.
So just looking at your rankings, Scott, it seems like Carlson is probably going to climb into the top 45 outfielders, maybe closer to 40. But based on the names that I just mentioned, he's probably going to land in that range for now and obviously has the ability to climb if he performs well early on here with St. Louis. Scott, Alec Baum, rest of season. We'll go head-to-head points here because I think that's probably his better format. Baum or Brian Anderson?
Baum.
Baum or Miguel Sano? Points league.
Sano.
Baum or Hunter Dozier?
Baum.
Baum or Kyle Seager?
Baum.
Boom, bomb goes the dynamite. We have some team names for regarding Alec Bomb that we received today. This one's from Patrick. N-A-bomination.
Abomination. Okay, that's a name.
That is a name. Received these from Twitter. Bomb goes the dynamite.
Bomb, you just said that.
I know.
Yourself.
I didn't plan that.
You pilfered it.
It happened. I'm sorry. The Bomb Supremacy.
Okay.
It doesn't really work.
I can't feign enthusiasm. I'm sorry.
He's the Bomb. That's the last one that we got, which is, it is what it is.
I can't feign enthusiasm, but maybe this guy can.
Oh, such a lovely name, such wit, so creative. Oh, I marvel at your creativity and wit and the desire to entertain us all. Oh, so thankful for your presence here today.
We got a dynasty question regarding Alec Bomb today as well. This one's from Matt. He has Vlad Guerrero Jr. in Dynasty as of now, and he received this offer. Scott, what would you do? He trades away Vlad Jr. and Carter Kieboom. He gets Alec Bomb, Nico Horner, Brady Garrett, and Brendan Rodgers.
All right, go over those names again.
Vlad Jr. and Carter Kieboom for Alec Bomb, Nico Horner, Brady Garrett, and Brendan Rodgers.
Okay. I don't think that's the kind of haul that would really come close to convincing me to give up Vlad in a dynasty league. Even though there's some good prospects coming back the other way. I mean, Vlad, he needs a real haul, and I just don't think this is it.
I agree with you. I responded to this and I said I probably wouldn't do it either. While we're on the topic of prospects, Scott, let's fire up the stash-o-meter. We haven't done this yet. And for redraft leagues, obviously, Gavin Lux, 61% rostered. Where does he lie on the stash-o-meter, Scott?
Well, I drop him for either Baum or Carlson. I drop him for a lot of players, actually. I will put him as a 4 on the stash-o-meter. Thinking in terms of that percentage needs to be more like 41 than 61. So I'll say 4.
Mackenzie Gore is 43% rostered, and he's probably the top pitching prospect that has not made a debut yet. Where does he rank on the stash-o-meter?
Probably about a 4 as well. That ownership sounds right.
His running mate, not on the same team, but I just always kind of tie these two together. I don't know why. But Casey Mize of the Detroit Tigers, we got a little tease a couple of weeks ago from Ron Gardenhire. It sounded like they were going to call him up, and then they didn't. He's 41% rostered. Where does he lie, Scott?
3.
Joey Bart, 24% rostered. Probably more in a two-catcher league if you're stashing him.
Yeah. I'm going to say for Joey Bart, 2.5. What you're hearing is that the roster percentages sound right for the most part, because I'm kind of echoing them with my ratings here.
Brendan McKay, Scott, is 28% rostered. Does that mean he is a 2.8 on the stash-o-meter?
No. I'll go 2. I mean, that's one of those situations where he has even more to prove than I feel like a guy who hasn't played. Because he was pretty useless last year when he was up. And that... that makes me less enthused to pick him up if you were to get the call, especially since we don't have numbers. You can't say, oh, he's dominating a AAA.
Right.
We're totally blind to what they're doing unless we hear someone randomly reported on Twitter. Like I saw a report today, Alec Bomb was apparently hitting over 500 at the minor league site. I don't know if that was an exaggeration or if somebody's actually keeping official statistics, but I thought it was worth noting.
Scott, Ryan Mountcastle, 14% roster. Don't look now. Baltimore is 10-7. Maybe they try to make a little run here, Scott.
I mean, Mountcastle should be up.
He should.
And I'm looking at their outfield now. Yeah, they could easily replace like Dwight Smith Jr.
Or they could just play him at first base, right? I mean,
well, Renato Nunez. I mean, I guess Renato Nunez usually plays DH. Yeah. I think he'll be up Mountcastle, but you know, the impact, you wonder what that's going to be. I'll give it a 3. Mountcastle a 3.
The last one that I'll mention is someone that we've received an email about recently as well, and it's Clark Schmidt, the pitching prospect for the Yankees. Honestly, Scott, it wouldn't surprise me if we see another like really bad start or two out of J-Hap. I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees called him up.
I wouldn't be either. He's not, you know, he's not quite the name brand prospect of most of these guys. I will give that a 1.5.
All right, Scott, this is probably the latest in the show that we have ever gone to Susan, but let's do it.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
A standout from Thursday night, Scott. Who do you got?
Oh, I got a great standout for you. You already mentioned him, Nick Senzel. Nick Senzel hit a home run, hit a double today, Thursday. After it was his second game back, I think, after missing a few days with an injury, groin injury. But, you know, more than just what he did in this one game, the ways he needed to improve to take this leap in his sophomore season, he is doing. It's a better launch angle. He's hitting the ball much harder. He looks like it looks like a stud hitting profile, even beyond what the numbers have shown so far. And the very small sample size. And of course, it being a very small sample size, those underlying stats, the StatCast measures could themselves normalize. But there is no reason to look at what Nick Senzel's doing right now and feel anything but super encouraged and super hopeful that he is this year's post-type sleeper.
Yeah, he went 3-for-4 on Thursday with a double, a homer, and 4 RBI. You mentioned some of the batted ball data that he's putting up so far this year. A 92-mile-per-hour average exit velocity. That is in the 92nd percentile. Just a great athlete. He's 96th percentile in sprint speed as well. The launch angle is up. You're right. I mean, he's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. You know, if someone in your league is not buying into what Senzel has done so far, because the numbers are not, like, eye-catching yet. But
right.
They easily 262 could be.
Batting average, right. And that's after a huge game and, you know, missed a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like a buy low opportunity, or a pre-buy high opportunity, I think more accurately would describe it.
It's a buy medium, Scott. I've never heard of that before, but that's what it seems like. He's been fine, but if people don't realize how good the underlying numbers are for him, you know, especially in those 5 outfielder roto leagues, I would definitely be trying to acquire Senzel before he takes off. For me, and it's hard for me to pass up on Mookie Betts, who, while we're recording this, has 3 home runs and might even make it 4, maybe even 5. Who knows by the end of that game? So Mookie Betts is awesome, but you don't need me to tell you that. Yu Darvish, Scott. Someone who I had a little bit of trepidation coming into the season because it just seems like so many things went right for him in the second half last year regarding his mechanics, his pitch mix, his command, something we have never seen out of Yu Darvish ever before. He took a no-hitter into the 7th inning on Thursday against the Milwaukee Brewers, finished his night 7 innings pitched, 1 hit, 1 earned, 2 walks, 11 strikeouts, 19 swinging strikes on 104 pitches. And what I like that I've seen so far out of him is that he is using that cutter slider as much as he did last year, which is really what I think helped him ascend to new heights in that second half. So, Yu Darvish, basically picking up where he left off.
Yeah, he threw it like more than half the time today, I think. He has so many pitches that I feel like the pitch tracking system has trouble classifying everything. But
yeah.
He threw something that came out to an average velocity of high 80s. Like 51% of the time today, and it was responsible for the majority, as you would expect with all those pitches thrown, of his 19 swinging strikes. I mean, you're very happy with what you drafted in Yu Darvish at this point and have no reason to worry.
Scott, would you rather have Yu Darvish or Mike Clevinger right now?
I know I have Mike Clevinger ahead. I'm going to keep Mike Clevinger ahead, but it's close.
I would agree with that assessment. Would you rather have Yu Darvish or Lucas Giolito?
Man, that's even closer.
I'm definitely not using your rankings to ask you these questions, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, you know, this is why rankings are an imperfect way of classifying players anyway. Because I don't really care that much, probably is the right answer. I'll say Lucas Giolito.
All righty. With that, I'm going to hit some news and notes. Corey Seager was finally back in the Dodgers lineup, which I was so happy to see. His first at bat back, he hit a home run, batting second as the DH for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Alex Wood threw another bullpen session on Thursday. He'll throw one on Saturday and a simulated game next Tuesday, if all goes well. So that is Alex Wood. We'll see what happens there. It's a lot of moving parts in the Dodgers rotation right now. Gonsolin has pitched well. And
I saw Dave Roberts said he's supposed to get another start. We don't know why he got the last start. Five. Right. They have a six-man rotation right now for some reason.
Yeah, this raises the worry a little bit more on someone like Ross Stripling, who we spoke about recently as well. So he's got to get his act together because Alex Wood and Gonsolin are coming for his job. Jeff McNeil was carted off the field Thursday after crashing into the wall while making a catch. He was diagnosed with a bone contusion in his left knee. He is day-to-day, so pay attention to that over the weekend and heading into next week for weekly lineups. Chris Bryant was out of the Cubs lineup Thursday due to soreness around his left ring finger and wrist. David Ross told reporters that he does not believe either injury is serious. Xander Bogaerts was absent from the Red Sox lineup Thursday due to, quote, fatigue in his lower half. I guess he's dealing with the same fatigue that Aaron Judge is dealing with. Weird, whatever that
means. There have been a lot of, like, vague injury classifications so far, haven't there? Like, Kirby Yates had body soreness.
Yeah.
Better than mind soreness, I guess.
Mike Moustakas did some on-field drills during batting practice Thursday. If all goes well in the coming days, he could be activated when first eligible this Sunday. On the contrary, Braves manager Brian Snitker said on Wednesday night, actually, didn't catch this yesterday, that he is not expecting Ozzie Albies to be ready for activation next week. He is dealing with a wrist injury. Victor Velasquez pitched in relief Thursday, so it now appears...
Vince Velasquez.
What did I say?
Victor.
Victor.
Vince.
What did
or
I
Vincent.
I even wrote
when
Vince.
When he first came up. Remember when it was Vincent Velasquez?
I do. That was like Nick versus Nicholas Castellanos. John Carlos Stanton versus Mike Stanton. I don't know. Just a weird thing. I don't know where I got Victor from. I wrote Vince in the notes right there. Vince Velasquez pitched in relief Thursday, so it now appears that Spencer Howard will indeed get the start on Friday against the New York Mets.
Yeah, they have a bunch of doubleheaders coming up, too. They have a doubleheader this week, so it sounds like it's going to be more like a six-man rotation for a while than how it was initially presented with Vince Velasquez and Howard piggybacking.
Buster Olney of ESPN reported that another staff member for the Cardinals has tested positive for COVID-19. Will it ever just go away? The Cardinals game against the White Sox on Friday has been postponed. The plan as of now is to play a doubleheader this Saturday. The Cardinals, again, have not played since July 29th. Probably going to be some rust there, Scott. But not for Dylan Carlson, we hope.
What was that? I'm sorry. I was talking over it.
But hopefully not for Dylan Carlson.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whenever they're playing again, he's going to be on the team. We know that much. And in addition to this doubleheader Saturday, two doubleheaders are scheduled for next week for them, Monday and Wednesday against the Cubs, which means the Cardinals are looking at a 9-game week or maybe a 0-game week. But ideally a 9-game week, which I've never seen before. And the pitching matchups are actually pretty tough, but still 9 games for just a regular length, a 7-day week. You know, that's going to be good news for Cardinals hitters, maybe, unless they're all super rusty and you don't want any of them. Dylan Carlson, if nothing else, right? I think they're going to, my hunch is they're going to make this happen if they can get through today, their next report tomorrow, no more positives, like Saturday is going to happen because It's like it's the season's going to be over and the Cardinals haven't played at all, you know, if they don't get things going soon.
Yeah, you're not wrong, Scott.
Like there's a plan in place for players to like all rent their own cars and drive to Chicago so that they're not intermingling.
It's
traveling just, there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2020. See what happens. Some standouts from Thursday, Scott. We mentioned a triple dong for Mookie Betts. We had a double dong from JT Realmuto. He is in fuego, now up to 7 home runs on the season. Tomas Nido, not fantasy relevant at all, but he did have a double dong. So there's your shout out, Tomas Nido. It's probably going to be the only one you get all season. Tyler Glass now, Scott. Almost made him my, oh my goodness gracious, player of the night for all the wrong reasons. Let me not say that. He still had 8 strikeouts. The strikeouts are still there for Tyler Glass now. 4 innings pitched, 8 hits, 5 earned, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, 11 swinging strikes on 84 pitches in Boston against the Red Sox. He has now failed to go more than 4 2/3 in every start this season. His next start comes at the Yankees. And I don't really want to start him, Scott. His last week against the Yankees, 2 2/3, 5 hits, 4 earned, 3 walks. Yankees are a very patient lineup, a great lineup up and down. I said this about Blake Snell last week. I don't want to kind of be burned and do this again, but if I own Glass now, I really don't want to start him there against the Yankees.
Yeah, optimally, I don't think you would start him. I wouldn't be afraid to start him, like in a league where you just didn't have better options and you were really having to stretch, like in a 15-team league, I'm thinking. The kind of pitcher you'd be picking up off the waiver wire. Because the stuff appears great. He's getting strikeouts. It's measuring like it did last year. It's just not throwing enough strikes. He's 50. He entered this game having thrown strikes just 58% of the time. That's versus 64.9 last year, which is a big difference. And that needs to change. I don't know if that's rust contributing to it, but if there's any organization I have faith in getting him fixed, it's this one. So I think Glasnow is going to be fine in the long run. But, you know, if you can avoid starting him, especially with that matchup, probably wise.
Will this gentleman be fine, Scott? Chris Paddock, 3 innings pitched against the Dodgers, 6 hits, 6 earned runs, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. Before we started recording today, Scott, you said, I'm a little worried about Chris Paddock. Why is that?
It seems like my concern about him coming into the season, just not having a diverse enough arsenal, might be catching up to him now that he's been around the league for a while. He's not getting the whiffs he did last year. He's giving up more contact, and he's giving up harder contact too. 3 home runs today. I mean, his hard contact rate was up before you even apply today's outing to it. And you know, the velocity seems fine. It's not like it looks like an issue of him not being ready for the season or him losing something stuff wise. At least as far as I can tell, he's just getting hit a lot harder. And, you know, having only 2 pitches, you wonder if that's contributing to it. So, you know, I don't know what actionable you can do with that. Today is not a good day to try and sell Chris Paddock, but I am not super comfortable that you're going to get what you bargained for when you bought him.
Scott, if someone came to you right now and said, I will give you Dylan Bundy for Chris Paddock, you would say blank. It's a good one.
I think I'd say yes.
I don't blame you. How can anyone bet against what Dylan Bundy has done to this point? I mean, he's completely reinvented himself. He has the 3 pitches, and not that his fastball is good, but it's a get me over pitch, and the slider and the changeup are very good, which is something you can't say about Chris Paddock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can tell you how you could argue against Dylan Bundy, and that's just look at his track record. I mean, we are reacting to just 4 starts. Granted, 4 starts at the start of a season with a change in environment, I am encouraged. But what would cause me to hesitate with that Paddock deal is more about what happens to Dylan Bundy from here versus what happens to Chris Paddock from here. I'm less concerned about missing out on what Chris Paddock's going to give me than I am, you know, using him to get what ends up being a total dud from this point forward in Bundy. So that's a risk, but it might be one I'm willing to take at this point, knowing how short the season is and having legitimate questions at this point about Paddock's upside and believing Bundy might actually have more.
Yes or no, Scott, if you have Paddock, would you offer that deal to the Dylan Bundy owner right now?
I guess I have to say yes, right?
I would do it. I would do it. It might be reactionary, but you're right, Scott. I mean, we're almost halfway through the season. You need guys that are going to contribute, and Dylan Bundy looks like one of the best pitchers. We're going to go over the top five at every position a little bit later on, and Dylan Bundy is a top five pitcher in fantasy right now.
It's worth stating because we don't always address the dynasty angle. Want to do it in a dynasty league.
Oh, I agree, 100%.
Yeah, let's stick with Paddock there.
Trey Turner went 0-for-3 on Thursday with two walks and one run. We keep getting a lot of tweets, not necessarily questions through our email, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. But he is now batting .218, Trey Turner that is, .718 OPS with zero steals, three caught stealing. The sprint speed is still 99th percentile, Scott. Career high average exit velocity. The problem is the launch angle's up, which I don't like, and it's something I've talked about before. I think he might be putting a little bit too much pressure on himself. He might be trying to, you know, swing for the fences and hit home runs. That's not Trey Turner's
Willie
game.
Willie Mays Hayes in Major League 2.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
come on, Turner.
I think the steals are going to come. There is nothing that says, at least in the data, that he is any slower or anything. I just think if he had three steals versus three caught stealing, would we really be concerned over Trey Turner right now? Maybe a little bit on the batting average, but outside of that, I don't think so.
He's probably going to have one of these weeks where he steals four bases and we forget all about what happened here at the start of the year. You know, the only case coming in for having any concerns about Trey Turner as a base stealer was there was this talk of him moving down in the order, batting third, and that hasn't happened. He's batted leadoff every single game. So I don't know why his base stealing habits would change. It's the same manager as last year. I think it's just that he has a 290 OBP and just, you know, the distribution of steals is always kind of sporadic and probably shouldn't worry too much.
Someone else who's also struggling and was an early round pick is Rafael Devers, who went 1-for-5 on Thursday, is batting .169. What is going on with Rafael Devers, Scott? I mean, next week he plays 7 games, 2 against left-handed pitching. Would you consider benching Rafael Devers?
In a shallow league, if I had a great third base alternative, like maybe, I don't know, I'm having trouble getting Gio Urshela in my lineup. I could see that. But, you know, I'm not benching him because I just picked up Alec Baum, or, you know, I'm not benching him for Kyle Seager or Brian Anderson. I don't think that's good process.
I think that's a fair cutoff. So like JD Davis or Urshela, if you have one of those guys on your bench somehow, you might in a points league. It's shallow lineups. Then I think that's something you can look into doing. But I think once you get past, like, you get into the LaStella, David Fletcher, Kyle Seager range, you probably don't want to go that far down the list.
Yeah, like we talked about last week. I mean, we were talking more from like a trade standpoint, but you know, unless you think Rafael Devers has gotten worse, like his baseline is worse, he's just not a good player anymore, then you have to trust that he's going to be Rafael Devers sooner than later, any day now, and you don't want to miss out on it when he is.
Scott, is there anything else that you want to hit from Thursday? Because there's some other things I do want to get to in terms of the Week 5 planner and looking at the top five at each position. Was there anything else that you felt necessary to get in here? Not a lot of games. It was a short slate. I think we had 6 games on Thursday. So,
yeah, I mean, Rowan Wick got a save for the Cubs after working the 8th yesterday, and Jeremy Jeffers was saved for the 9th. It ended up not being a save situation, but then Wick was back in for the save. He allowed a run, but, you know, I don't know. It seems like he's the front runner right now in that bullpen. Craig Kimbrell hasn't worked in a week. So that's something. Ian Happ, I feel like, is
awesome,
deserving of more hype because he's only rostered in about 60% of leagues. His slash line now after a two-hit game for the Cubs is 326, 456, 609. Power has been there. He's striking out even less last year when we were encouraged. He came up striking out only a quarter of the time. It's only like 22% this year. And like he might be taking a stud turn here. So that's high on the priority list for players to add Ian Happ. Josh Bell, he struck out three times today. As far as I can tell, that's the only thing going wrong for Josh Bell. His exit velo launch angle about the same as last year. It's just that he's striking out about twice as often as he ever has before, by the way. Like, striking out less wasn't a key to Josh Bell's breakout last year. He never struck out that much, and suddenly he is this year. I don't know if it's rust or what, but I'm still trusting him to come around. And
I think you can get Josh Bell for super cheap right now. I think the people that own Josh Bell are among some of the most frantic fantasy owners, right? Just in general.
Yeah. No, maybe. I mean, he wasn't drafted with a high degree of confidence in all likelihood, especially finishing last year on kind of a down note. So yeah, I think that's legit. Pedro Severino homered for the fourth time. Renato Nunez for the fifth time for the Orioles. I'm not seeing a lot in the data to suggest they're greatly improved players. It just seems like hot starts for decent players, players that might be worth rostering all season long, but not like they're not, I don't see them taking a stud turn here. So they're potential sell highs. I had a lot to talk about, apparently. A couple more things. Colin Moran homered for the sixth time. He had gone 3-for-23 since his fifth homer, so that he fell off pretty quickly. Not too interested in him. JT Realmuto homered twice. I think you mentioned that. He's up to 7 on the year, which has got to put him in the running for the major league lead, right? As a catcher, it's amazing. He's striking out more. He's elevating less. Two things that you think would be bad for a hitter's development. He's just crushing the ball, JT Realmuto. Hard hit rate, barrel rates, both extremely high. To me, that screams he's hot right now. And, you know, obviously he's JT Realmuto. He's probably still going to be the best catcher from this point forward. But he has not transcended to a new level of stardom, I don't feel like. So, you know, if you're weighing trade offers involving JT Realmuto, just keep that in mind. All right, two more things. You ready?
Like, hit me, Scott.
I'm like running through the whole show here. Anthony Desclafani was horrible.
Which
is worth mentioning because he was great his first two starts.
Is this why you don't like single start streamers, Scott? Because he was someone that I think I was probably more so advocating for last week than you were. But we did mention him as a single start stream this week.
And I mean, to me, with single start streamers, it's just how bad must your pitching staff be if you're having to resort to a single start streamer? You don't have any good pitchers? Because you know, if it's not weighing number of starts, why would you sit your good pitchers?
Yeah.
That's really what it's about for me. But yeah, I mean, 9 earned runs, 3 home runs against the Orioles, right? Is that who he was facing?
Against the Pirates, which the Pirate. Oh, one of the best matchups. It's a better matchup than the Orioles right now. The Orioles have the fourth highest batting average in baseball right now. It's crazy.
It's weird.
2020.
Desclafani. Like, I don't think he's great. I don't think this start makes him worse necessarily. It's just the kind of thing Anthony Desclafani is going to run into from time to time. And I thought there was one more thing. Oh, AJ Pollock homer for the fifth time. He's been starting more lately. You know, hasn't been an everyday player for the Dodgers. And, you know, he's not making especially hard contact, but AJ Pollock's obviously been a good player before, and if the playing time increases, I could see him becoming somebody that we really talk about in a must-start sense again.
He's just owned in so many leagues right now, 79%. It doesn't really make much sense to me. Sure, in roto leagues, 5 outfielder leagues, but I think I'd rather own the other guys we've talked about recently over him. Jesse Winker, even Santander. I mean, at least Santander plays every day.
I think just if you're assessing it based on relative ownership than, you know, Pollock. There needs to be a little switcheroo there, but that doesn't mean Pollock is somebody you're dumping. I mean, I'd rather have Ian Happ, certainly the glowing things I said about him, and he's only about 60, 61% rostered. So yeah, no, I agree with that. Pollock is probably over rostered relative to them, but it's more about them being under rostered, I think, than Pollock being over rostered.
All right, we're going to take a break here, quickly promote that to celebrate the fantasy football draft season. We've said it once, we'll say it again. Our friends over at Fantasy Football Today, Adam Azer, Heath Cummings, Jamie Eisenberg, Dave Richard, Ben Gretsch, the crew, they're giving away a 75-inch and a 55-inch TV. The contest is completely free to enter. To win, go to cbssports.com/giveaway and make sure you subscribe to that podcast and their YouTube channel as well. Leave a 5-star Apple Podcast review for this podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. Drop a question in there, and we will answer it on a future podcast. We love you. Thanks. We come back. We're going to hit the Week 5 planner and look at the top 5 at each position so far in fantasy baseball this season.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to Fantasy Baseball Today. He's Scott White. I am Frank Sanfel. And the main question to ask you at this point, Scott, is Jim Halpert a bad person?
No, no. We're not going to do this on the podcast. No,
no. No, he's not a bad person, or no, you're just not going to answer?
I mean, if you're going to say Jim Halpert is a bad person, I think you need to first take inventory of your own life and maybe some missteps you made in it, because I promise you, you didn't handle everything so gracefully either. I promise you.
We were talking about it during the break, so I wanted to throw Scott for a loop there with some Jim Halpert.
Jim Halpert is honestly probably one of my favorite TV characters of all time. I think he's actually the second most important character in The Office after Michael Scott. I know most people would probably go Dwight, but yeah,
I mean, just think that's because Dwight is so likable. But if you're talking about importance, yeah, it might make sense.
Yeah.
And for anyone out there who doesn't like The Office, normally I would say, look, you know, everyone has their own opinion. It's fine. If you don't like something, it's all right. But the people who don't like The Office, I think that they're just trying too hard to be cool and go against the grain. The Office is awesome. Just accept it.
I mean, it's so much cringe humor. I can understand how that might not appeal to certain people.
Oh God,
it's great. Like
the Tots episode is like the most cringy thing. Oh man, when he tells the kids that he's not paying for their college tuition, that was just...
It's something about that. Like, have you ever seen My Cousin Vinny? I feel like the same. Yeah. Like just that thrill you get of watching somebody step in it, you know, like when one of your classmates would get in trouble in elementary school and you'd have to like kind of hide your giggle, you know. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, week 5, Scott, let's get into it. Scott, who is your favorite 2-start pitcher that is rostered in 80% or less for next week?
Yeah, my favorite pitcher rostered in 80% of leagues or less. Well, let me pull up my 2-start rankings here because I don't have an answer ready for that. I would say, man, but I don't actually like him. I don't love my sleeper pitchers for this week. Let me just preface it with that. Dylan Cease among the 2-start options who are available in you know, who are owned in less than 80% of leagues. He's probably my favorite, and yet I'm always talking him down every opportunity I seem to get. But he is making two starts. One is against the Tigers. So I guess if you're looking for a sleeper pitcher for this week, he would have to be high on the list. Jordan Montgomery's up there too. He gets the Red Sox and the Mets. Chris Bassett, two-start pitcher, getting the Diamondbacks and the Angels. And among sleeper pitchers, at least two start options, like those are the ones that I'm most comfortable recommending. I think Zach Eflin, we talked about him after his big start Wednesday, 10 strikeouts, 19 swinging strikes, both career highs. It's really risky turning to him for a two-start week after that at Boston, at Atlanta. I probably only do that in a points league. And there are some, you know, there's a pretty good number of widely available two-start pitchers that I might take the leap on in a points league where the, you know, the threshold is easier to meet because a bad start doesn't hurt you as much.
Let's find out.
Zach Eflin would be in that group. Alex Cobb versus Toronto versus Boston.
Okay.
His splitter's been interesting this year. Austin Voth, who was actually terrible on Thursday, he has a two-start matchup coming up, one start against Miami. Kyle Freeland, been good so far, but not in a way we trust generally. And both of his starts are away from Colorado. Houston and the Dodgers, so not great matchups, but... In a points league, I could see it. It gets to be a question in points leagues of like, are you willing to free up a roster spot to pick up these guys? And usually the answer is no. But there's a lot of two-star pitchers this week. There's a lot of games happening this week. So it's...
We're going to have some fun, Scott.
Yeah, we are. And you're going to be going against opponents with a lot of two-star pitchers in their lineup, probably.
Scott, correct me if I'm wrong. Does Griffin Canning have a two-star week? Because CBS shows him against the Giants and at Oakland, which he hasn't been great recently, but I don't hate those matchups.
I don't either. It would be he's in this big group of two-start sleepers that might be worth considering in points leagues. He's right after Kyle Freeland for me. I could flip those two maybe, but like as I talked about after Griffin Canning's last start, I'm seeing a lot of reasons to be discouraged that he's actually going to be a useful pitcher this year after the excitement, you know, when he had such a good, his first couple turns turned out so well, but it's been downhill since then.
All right, Scott, I'm going to throw a few names your way and you just tell me whether or not you would start this player in all leagues, just points leagues, or in no leagues. So our good friend, Matthew Boyd at the White Sox and at Cleveland. Do you start him anywhere, Scott?
In a points league, I could see it. But I'd rather not.
I agree with
Definitely
you.
Definitely one in a categories league.
Zach Davies at the Texas Rangers and at home against the Houston Astros.
I mean, same answer. Points league, I could see it. I can't imagine freeing up a roster spot just to add him for a two-star week, though.
This is a fun name. David Peterson. Of the Mets, we have not talked about him at all, Scott. He did pick up the win on Thursday. He wasn't especially good. He was just fine. He's at the Marlins, and he's at home against the Yankees.
Well, I mean, he gave up only one hit in five innings Thursday to the Nationals. He's not really a bat misser, though. He doesn't have great control. Pretty good ground ball pitcher, but that's... You know, in the long run, I don't think this season goes very well for him. Two start week against with one of those matchups against the Marlins. Again, it's something I could see doing in a points league, but probably won't have the roster space for it. Probably every pitcher you're going to bring up, that's going to be the answer. I'll run off a few other names who fall into that category since we're so far into it already. Chris Bubich going against the Twins twice.
Yikes.
Kind of a interesting scheduling quirk there. Brandon Bielak of the Astros versus Colorado at San Diego, Jake Arrieta at Boston and at Atlanta, and Antonio Senzatella at Houston and at the Dodgers. You know, like those are desperation plays in a points league only, I feel like. And that's, I think at this point we're tapped out on options worth considering. I mean, Luke Weaver's in line for two starts, but you just can't trust him right now.
So bad, you can't even sing his name anymore. I don't even think Adam would sing his name.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a more depressing version of it for sure.
I'm trying to think how that would sound.
Luke Weaver.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Get some blues playing behind it or something. He's been bad. He has been quite bad. Some single
Luke
starters.
Weaver.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
A disgrace to the uniform and to your fantasy roster. Get him out of there before I do it for you.
You can't argue with that.
Yep.
Some single starts, Scott. Do you dare meddle with Robbie Ray at the San Francisco Giants?
No.
For one?
No.
That means you could drop him in all leagues. I think if you're not going to start him in San Francisco, Scott, he probably shouldn't be owned.
I understand the argument. I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but I don't know. A turnaround could be instantaneous, and then you could be rushing to pick him up again.
All right, yay or nay on these names, Scott. Josh Lindblom at the Pirates.
That's a nay.
Steven Matz at Miami.
You know, I'm less than enthralled, but not a flat nay.
Spencer Turnbull at the White Sox.
Nah. Nah. Is this, are we looking at tomorrow's matchups right now?
No. These are for next week.
This is for next week. Okay.
Yeah. Adam Plutko versus Detroit.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to happen because Plutko's out once Clevinger and Plesac return. So I would not count on that happening.
Randy Dobnak at Kansas City.
I'm going to say yay there unless he gets shelled this weekend.
Yeah, fair enough, Scott. On the sleeper hitter front, Scott, who are some names, some teams that have some good matchups, some players you like?
All right. So like I said, the Cardinals may have a 9-game week. They may have a 0-game week. The matchups actually aren't that good. So I'm not sure who I'd be interested in playing there. Dylan Carlson may be in a 5 outfielder league. The teams that I have down for having the best matchups are the Nationals, the Red Sox, the Mets, the Angels, and the Indians. The teams I have with the worst matchups are the Rays, Pirates, Rockies, Tigers, and Mariners. Some hitters that I think you could look into playing include Eric Hosmer. Let's hope he starts every game over the weekend, because if he continues with this in and out of the lineup stuff, that's going to be a no-go. But yeah, 7 games, 6 righties. Matchups are not enough to steer me away from him. As Drupal Cabrera, I mentioned the Nationals have the best matchups this week, so second or third base for him wouldn't be a bad play. Renato Nunez, the Orioles, I didn't mention them among the 5 best matchups, but they're up there too. Howie Kendrick, I feel like I recommend him every week and he hasn't done much. But yeah, Nationals have the best matchups. He might be somebody to consider. Dominic Smith, the Mets have the 3rd best matchups, as I mentioned. They are scheduled to face just 2 lefties in a 7-game week. And Dominic Smith homered on Thursday for the 2nd straight day. You know he's going to be in the lineup at least against the 5 righties. He is elevating the ball well, already up to 4 home runs. I think he's, you know, a decent sleeper for this upcoming week. Robbie Grossman has been in the lineup every day for the Athletics against righties, and that's all they're scheduled to face this week. The Diamondbacks and Angels rotations. So he might be a sneaky sleeper too. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. My usual preface this as I usually do with, you know, these are only things you do if you have a real hole in your offense. Like I'm not advising any of these players over one of your studs, over one of your tried and trues, the guys you drafted to carry your lineup. But if you do have a hole, these are the types of players that can fill in that hole for you this week.
If you're still listening at this point, you probably guessed it. We're not going to get the top five, get to the top five at each position. We'll do it at some point. I don't know if it's going to happen next week with all the games that are going on either. But whenever we see a soft spot in the schedule, we'll try and look over the top players at each position right now in fantasy baseball. But I wanted to get to this, Scott, and I know it's something that you guys have done in years past per the request of Luke via email. And probably others, I'm assuming. We're bringing back looking at probable pitchers for the day that you are listening to this podcast. We'll let you know whether or not we would start each or not. So let's look at the probable starters for Friday. I assume the must-starts are Jacob deGrom, Gerrit Cole, Brandon Woodruff, Clayton Kershaw, Sonny Gray, Frankie Montas, Denelson Lamet, and Aaron Civale, who is facing the Tigers. I did not include Lance Lynn. I probably should, but he's in Colorado. So I'll just ask Scott.
Yeah, I'd start Lance Lynn.
All right, so let's run down the list. Tanner Roark versus the Tampa Bay Rays.
Nope.
Spencer Howard versus the Mets.
Nah, I don't think so.
Ivan Nova versus Cleveland.
No.
Chad Kuhl at the Cincinnati Reds.
No.
Kyle Wright at Miami.
No.
Pablo Lopez versus Atlanta.
I might if it was a better matchup, but Braves are tough, so no.
I kind of like it, though. No Acuna pitching at home in Marlins Park. Can I talk
forgot,
you into
I forgot Acuna wasn't there.
I could talk you into it I here, mean, Scott.
I'd rather not, but if, like, among pitchers that are available, this is the most attractive one. This is the most attractive play you've brought up so far.
Fair enough. Jake Junis at Minnesota?
No.
Jake Odorizzi versus Kansas City.
No, he was so limited first time out.
I agree. The Royals have actually been a tough matchup so far. Tyler Chatwood, can he bounce back, Scott, versus the Brewers?
I could do that. I could go for that. I think the Chatwood we saw his first three turns, right, is closer.
I think it was two.
Two? Yeah, I'm still buying Tyler Chatwood. I think he just had a bad start last time out. So I could do that play.
How about Ryan Castellani versus the Rangers?
Get out of here with this. Come on.
Yusei Kikuchi at Houston.
Didn't go so well for him last turn. I think that was also against Houston. I wouldn't be afraid to play him, I don't think, but I'd rather not.
Framber Valdez on the other side in that game against the Mariners.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's run him out there.
Patrick Sandoval versus the Dodgers?
No.
Merrill Kelly versus the Padres?
I'd rather not. You could do it, but I'd rather not.
I think he's delivered a quality start in every start this season. I would do it. Scott wouldn't. Johnny Cueto versus the Oakland A's, Scott?
No.
A few questions, fantasybaseball at CBSi.com. This one is from Matthew in a head-to-head points league. I need to sit one of these for next week. Max Scherzer versus the Marlins? Doubt it. Aaron Nola at Toronto? Kenta Maeda has two starts. Zach Gallen has two starts. And Yu Darvish against the Cardinals.
Well, what in the world?
This is someone who clearly listened to you, Scott, and went all in on pitching, and now they have a great staff. I'm sitting Yu Darvish against the Cardinals.
What kind of league are you only starting four starting pitchers anyway? I mean,
I don't know.
Maybe he has Shane Bieber also. I don't know. Well, it would have to be one of the... Who did you say you were sitting?
Darvish against the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Scherzer... you got to play Scherzer.
I mean, the problem is the two worst pitchers here are the ones with two starts, and it's a points league. So,
yeah.
I think Darvish. Yeah, I agree.
This one's from Chris. You guys have talked a lot about fringe second baseman and other fringy ads like Brandon Nimmo, Garrett Hampson, Nick Solak, etc. But I haven't heard where names like Kevin Newman and Luis Urias rank among those guys. Very far behind them, in my opinion, Scott.
Yeah. I mean, Newman was a late-round pick. Urias was hardly drafted. and they haven't done anything this year. So I don't know why you would put them in the same class as those. Now, I mean, that could change very quickly, but I don't see the incentive to use up a roster spot on either Newman or Arias, who are very questionable heading into the year. And in Newman's case, I don't think there's a lot of upside anyway. They're well behind them.
And Arias started his first two games back and then sat the next two. So it doesn't seem like he's an everyday player yet. I see the path more so for him kind of taking off rather than someone like Newman, just based on the prospect pedigree for Arias. Yeah. This next one's from Jeremy. Can you please help me rank the following players? I have to drop one, and then whenever Donaldson comes back, I will have to drop a second. You ready, Scott? You got your pen and paper ready?
I got the names in front of me. I can do this.
Marwin Gonzalez, Jesse Winker, Austin Slater, Gavin Lux, and Garrett Hampson. How would you rank those five, Scott?
Hampson, Winker.
Agreed.
Lux, Slater, and Gonzalez. Now, Slater has a chance to overtake Lux here, probably in between now and Donaldson coming back. But for now, that's how I rank them.
Slater is dealing with an injury that has kept him out of the lineup, I believe, the past 2 days. So that is something to pay attention to. But I agree with your order. I would have Gavin Lux third on that list as well. This one's from Caleb. Scott was on something last night. Too many peeps, I think.
Nope, no peeps for me last night. What did I have last night?
Who is on the pro peeps versus anti peeps? I know that there's a lot of discussion about peeps on this podcast, but I don't know where everyone lies.
I'm the only one defending the peeps here. And for the record, it's not like they're my favorite treat in the world or anything. I just don't understand the overwhelming backlash they receive when they're basically a marshmallow covered in sugar. And why is that a problem? Like,
that's a lot of sugar.
Yeah, fine. If you don't like sugar, then you wouldn't like peep. If you don't like marshmallows, you wouldn't like a peep. But I'm of the understanding most people like marshmallows and like sugar. And, you know, a single peep, I happen to know this top of mind, a single peep has 7 grams of sugar. That's not an overwhelming amount of sugar for a candy. So, like, you know, like it's hard to make an, oh, this is unhealthy argument when you're talking about candy, right? Like, obviously, I don't know. I don't get why people are repulsed by peeps when there's nothing weird about them. It's such a basic candy. That's basically just a marshmallow covered in sugar.
Yeah, I don't have strong feelings either way. They're fine. Like, if I'm offered one, I'll eat one. I don't seek them out. You really only have them one time of year around Easter is when they're most popular, really. So they're fine. I mean, I love marshmallows. S'mores is probably like my favorite treat ever. S'mores are awesome, especially like freshly made s'mores, Scott.
It's an art form. Not everybody can do it. Some people don't have the patience for it. Some people just don't get the technique. But when you can properly toast a marshmallow, s'mores is just, it just goes next level. You know, some people get impatient. They light the marshmallow on fire.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you just have like a charcoal marshmallow that's like not even warm on the inside.
It's obviously going to taste gross. What are you doing?
If you can skillet enough, if you have like the stick and then the marshmallow, you place the Hershey's on top of the marshmallow and you kind of melt them together and then you have like warm chocolate. Oh gosh, yes. That is.
Yes. Ugh. The toasted marshmallow with the melted chocolate is a tremendous pairing.
All righty. That'll do it, Scott. We're heading off into the weekend. Plenty of office and peep talk today. More than I thought we'd get into. But boom, bomb, Alec bomb. Let's do it. For Scott, I am Frank. Thanks for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today on our YouTube channel. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.